What if we could live more in harmony with our animal friends and the whole of nature simply by stopping and listening more? Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators aims to bring animals and the world of nature front and center. We'll be chatting with professionals working in the animal industry and intuitive interspecies communicators about their work in the field. I'm your host, Tracy Pierce. I'm a professional animal communicator and lifelong animal lover and spiritual explorer. I've worked with animals professionally since 2002, and I've been studying animal communication and the human-animal connection since 2014. Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators is for animal lovers, nature lovers, intuitives, spiritual seekers, and those interested in interspecies communication. Our aim is to bring awareness to these professions and to expose the new and old science behind some of these seemingly out-of-the-world careers. We hope to educate and tickle your mind about what is possible by discussing this work and ways we can work with our animal friends, nature friends, and the planet as a whole, instead of them always being a secondary consideration. Join us now as we explore today's topic. Hello and welcome to this episode of Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators. Our guest today is Brianna Hollowell, and our topic is pet sitting, nomadic activism, and interspecies communication. Brianna is a writer, contemplative activist, soul searcher, and aspiring interspecies communicator who hears a divine call to weave the forgotten web of connection back into the places, both personal and collective, where colonizer consciousness has spread the lie that humans are separate from each other and the earth. Brianna is acutely aware of what she calls the cosmic ache. As an empath and vessel of divine source, she can feel in her body the collective wounds of humanity and the more than human beings with whom we share the earth. She is called to help humanity heal from the deleterious effects of global colonization. Brianna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So to kick things off, could you tell us a bit more about the work you've done with animals and how interspecies communication came into play for you?
Sure. So I've been a huge animal lover my entire life. Ever since I was a little kid, I would connect more with animals in my home and on the farm than I would with the humans. And I certainly felt from a young age that I could talk to them, and have since learned that there may have been some actual dissociation going on as a young one, where it felt like I was almost blending with my dog's energy, for example, as like sort of a way to escape to a safer place, where the animal really served that role for me as a young child growing up in a somewhat tumultuous household. So for most of my life, I felt a really strong sense that somehow I was meant to work with animals, and went into considering veterinary medicine, wildlife biology is what I ended up studying in college. But the science part of it never quite fit for me. It felt like it was sort of, there was a layer of separation between myself and the beings who I really wanted and longed to connect with. So while I was in college, I studied abroad in East Africa. I studied wildlife management in Kenya and Tanzania. And again, just had this sense of I'm meant to work with these animals in some way or another, but not to research them. And after college, started working at a small nonprofit private zoo where it was mostly a big cat sanctuary. And there I had a tremendous amount of energetic connection with the animals, but didn't know how to talk about it because I had at that point been almost entrained to believe that animals didn't have, you know, I was taught not to anthropomorphize the animals or to assume what they were thinking or feeling, even though I, in my heart, I had known for a long time that animals are extremely empathic and sensitive creatures who have their own kind of intelligence and emotional intelligence, especially. And that knowing actually in when I was about 15 led me to stop eating meat for about 10 years. I was so aware of like the meat on my plate, especially if it had been factory farmed or, you know, didn't come from a local organic source. I could actually feel in my body like the pain of the animal that I was eating. And I had a similar sense when I was at the Conservator Center, the small nonprofit zoo that I worked at, where it was like anytime we had to shift an animal from one enclosure to another, there was just this like, oh, there's got to be a different way to do this, because their approach was actually very hands-on, but not sensitive. It was sort of you go in there, you put the animal, you know, into the crate and you move them without ever kind of talking to the animal about it or having like a smooth transition. It was just like, well, that's just another task to be done. And when I was at the Conservator Center, there was a lot going on in my personal life and within the management and the staff that just led to it not being a very healthy environment for myself or for the animals. And there was a couple of instances where I was working with another keeper and we were in an enclosure and the animal felt that we had, you know, approached too quickly. And so there was actually a couple of attacks that kind of created concern for everybody in the whole staffing unit. But rather than having a conversation about how to have better protocols or, you know, how we can do things differently, they just wanted to take me out of the equation. There was, you know, and at that age, I was in my early 20s. I didn't really know who I was. I just knew I wanted to work with animals. And I didn't have the language to talk about what I felt like was going wrong, which was very much energetic and intuitive sense of like these, you know, these animals are not being cared for in the ways that they could be. They were well cared for and tended to with their basic needs of food and shelter and affection and connection. And, you know, it was a very well-run facility, but as an intuitive empath, it was just something felt really off. But I ended up leaving that job kind of feeling like, well, you know, I got attacked by the animal, so maybe it is something that's wrong with me and I'm not meant to work with animals. It kind of like set me off on a different path for a while where I got more into writing and editing and activism with humans. And that was good and important, but all the while I was pet sitting and just had this clear sense of I'm not meant to be working with humans so much. I'm meant to really be hands-on working with the animals. And I think it was September or October, the fall of 2020, or no, maybe it was 2021, I heard a podcast with Anna Breitenbach. She's a South African-based intuitive interspecies communicator, and it was a Charles Eisenstein podcast that I listened to, and she talked about interspecies communication as a professional path, and it just sparked this young part of me that said, oh, there are people doing this work in the world. I know about the intelligence of the animal kingdom. I don't call it the kingdom, that I can learn from and actually apply like my personal intuitive empathic skill set that for a long time I kind of had to set aside. And it feels like I had to kind of create a calloused skin for myself to protect myself from the harshness of the world and of especially the human created world. So for the past several years, I've been leaning more into how to connect with animals on a much more from a much more sensitive and empathic place.
Wow, your story is really amazing, and I can relate a lot to what you're saying. When I was in my 20s, I worked for animal control, and so I can totally relate to what you're saying about, because the particular shelter that I worked with, like, they were very well known in my area for being like amazing. And but at the same time, there were these things going on there that just didn't feel quite right to me. And, you know, after I left that job, it was a similar thing where I kind of went on a totally different path, and then like happened to connect with an animal communicator that kind of like sparked, like, oh, there is something else here that I could really dive into and work with the way I feel about animals in a totally different way than I ever thought was possible. So it's so amazing to hear other people have, you know, kind of a similar story and to feel that sensitivity and to be able to come back around and eventually learn to connect with the animals in a different way that feels so much better than these very, I guess I want to say, institutional ways of that we've typically treated animals or looked at animals in the past. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of background working with animals, as you've told us a little bit here so far. And, you know, we talked about pet sitting when we were kind of emailing back and forth and these things. I wonder, is there anything else that you would want to say about how that work with animals kind of influenced you to get more into the interspecies communication part of things? Or
I feel like I got into house sitting and pet sitting sort of randomly. Like, I'm sure that throughout college or times of my life, I had definitely stayed at other people's houses and looked after their pets or lived with roommates who had pets. And it was just sort of a natural transition for me. And it was like a family friend was looking for somebody to house it for a couple of weeks, and they had farm animals. There was a donkey and two pygmy goats and a cow, and it was like, and two dogs and a cat. And I said, yeah, you know, I've grew up on a farm. I've taken care of a lot of different types of animals. I think that I can do that. And I did, and it worked fine. At the time, I didn't really know what animal communication was, and so it was just caring for them in the ways that I traditionally had. But that same winter, this is maybe 3 years ago now, the family friend who we had had pets of, or got us in touch with another person who had recently adopted a really sweet dog that was just not very well socialized and had a kind of a special needs dog. It was like not just any person could come in and take care of him. They couldn't bring him to a kennel when they went away on like ski trips and things, which they did a lot because their son was on the ski team. And so they were really looking for somebody who could actually come live at their house for up to a week at a time to be with this dog who, you know, really just needed a different level of sensitivity than I think most people are willing or able to provide for a pet, at least in my experience. But I think that first interaction with him, like the first couple of times I went to the house, he wouldn't even approach me unless the mom was home. He, like, if I had a lot of treats, he would be in the room with me, but he wouldn't let me touch him. He would not eat for like the first couple of times when I was there. If I had to feed him a meal, he just wouldn't eat it until his family got home. And so this is a few months after I had heard that podcast with Anna Breitenbach, and it occurred to me, like, there is some communication that can happen between us. So I knew just sort of the basics of how to center myself, how to open myself energetically, how to open my heart to him. And I just tried that. I just, the first time that I stayed there for like a whole weekend, I I'm trying to remember if my partner was with me. He really didn't like my partner, who's a man. You know, it's, I think the dog had a different sense of male versus female humans. He was more nervous around then. So I think it was just the two of us, just me and this dog, Lex. And I, one morning, came downstairs, and usually when I would come downstairs, he would just book it, like, out of the room or back upstairs, just be away from me. But the whole time that I was walking down the stairs, I was just putting out this energetic, like, I love you, Lex. I love you. Like, I'm going to go to the refrigerator, you know, get out your food. Like, I'm going to walk pretty close by you. You know, you don't need to move. Like, just be relaxed. And I was just sort of in this really nice, pleasant place in my own body. And Lex just laid there and looked at me. And we made eye contact, and he didn't feel like he had to get up and run away. And it was just such a marvelous moment for me to realize this dog who's very human, like afraid of humans and very nervous around new people, that all he needs is just a little extra love and attention and consciousness, you know, this kind of silent signal that we can send, or that I could send to him, to let him know that he's safe and can trust me. That was that. We've been now dog sitting at that home with Lex for about 3 years, and it's just been really wonderful to see him grow and develop through the communications that I've been able to have with him since then.
Wow, that's really cool to be able to connect like that with an animal. I've had some similar experiences pet sitting, and just to feel that trust and that love then come from them is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, I recall you said it was about 2021 when you first found mm-hmm. Anna. Mm-hmm. And then, so you've kind of been doing more studying since then. So just to give us a little bit of context, what level do you see yourself as an interspecies communicator at this point in time? Mm.
That is a kind of an interesting question at this particular point in my life, because I think I see myself really differently than other people who know me and know about my communications see me. And so I feel a bit like an imposter. I'm a little bit stuck in the beginner phase, because there's a part of me that is aware I have not taken an official workshop or class with, like, or had any kind of mentoring one-on-one with a human animal communicator. I did take a couple of group classes that weren't focused on the techniques or practices of animal communication, but more on the theory of it. I guess I would say amateur, which I'm kind of trying to reclaim that word for myself. Like, I know I'm not a total beginner, but I'm certainly not advanced in the way that I practice it every day or do it professionally. It's like, I now feel confident that I can communicate with, I don't know if you can see her, but
she keeps walking through in the back there.
Yeah. So we're actually cat sitting right now. And, you know, I feel confident. I had a little conversation with Nell and then our dog Callie, who is also here at the house with us, who mostly gets along with cats, but the owners of, or Nell's parents, were kind of nervous about having another dog or having a dog in the house with her. And, you know, I could assure them, like, I will be communicating with the two of them and make sure that nothing, you know, if there's any sense of either of them not wanting to share the space, then we will take care of that. And so I feel confident doing it on my own in situations like this, but I don't necessarily see myself as like a professional interspecies communicator at this point.
Mm-hmm. Great. It's great to have that context. And I definitely can relate to the imposter syndrome thing.
Yeah.
I felt like really, I didn't have human teachers necessarily. Like, I had read a few books, but it was more like the animals wanted to teach me. And then when the animals started saying, well, Tracy, we want you to do this professionally, like to start to offer to people. I was like, are you kidding me? I don't have the right training for this. They're like, what do you think we've been doing the last 2 years?
Right. <You know?
laughs> So yeah, it's kind of funny the way the animals can kind of give us that little push maybe that we need. And I guess I feel like as long as we're able to communicate with them, you know, we don't necessarily have to prove ourselves to the humans.
That's a really good reminder.
Yeah, right. So, you know, one of the main reasons I had contacted you was because you're a pet sitter, and I'm also a pet sitter. I'm pet sitting right now, actually, as well.
Okay.
And it's certainly changed the way that I approach pet sitting. And I'm curious if the learning, the more learning that you've done of the animal communication has changed the way that you pet sit or experiences, and anything you might like to share with us about that.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is just like similarly to this pet sitting with Elle, the cat, before I even got to the house. I mean, I had come to the house to meet the cat, meet her parents, and see the place. And it's a longer pet sit. It's 6 weeks. So I guess after I met Nell, I asked them to send me a photo of her. And then that's when I did the communication, even before coming into the house, just to give her a sense of who I am, that her parents will be away for a while. You know, I guess there's a level of respect that feels like, since I started practicing interspecies communication, I just have a different level of respect that I feel is important to offer to the animal, like rather than assuming that they know what's going on or that, you know, they'll be fine with a stranger in their house for 6 weeks. It's like, no, like if I was going to stay with a friend for 6 weeks, I would certainly be having conversations with them about, you know, boundaries and spaces that they like and their favorite foods and that sort of thing. So I think that's really been the biggest difference for me is just that having that respectful conversation with the animal before going into the house so that we can just start off on a good foot and have a good time for both of us.
And I assume then that you found it, that it's kind of easier to connect with the animal than when you're there, and like to get that trust factor kind of in place. Does that seem accurate to you, or?
Oh, definitely. I think Flex, again, the dog that we were dog sitting, have been dog sitting for a few years, like he's a great example of, like I said, when I first started, he wouldn't even come near me. And after a few house-sits and communicating with him and just having a lot of connection with him, he now gets up in my, I mean, he's a big dog, but he thinks he's a lap dog, and he will just get up on my chest and cuddle with me. And it's like, I couldn't even touch this dog for weeks when I was first meeting him without communicating. So it definitely has shifted the level of trust and relationship that I'm able to have with the animals that I'm caring for.
Are there any other stories that you want to tell about Lex or any of the other pet sitting experiences that really have stood out to you?
Yeah, I think the one about Lex, after I had developed that really close relationship with him, one of the things, I think it was, so they have, the house has like a above garage apartment that I was staying in for a little while, so that I was present for the time when they were often going away, and I could just be at the house already to take care of Lex. But in order to do that, I really wanted my dog to be with me too, because otherwise she would have to stay with my mom, and that was just, it would have been better to have her with us. But both Lex and my dog Kali have been attacked by other dogs in the past and had a little bit of fearful aggression that, you know, understandably myself and the other owner were a bit concerned about introducing them, especially because the first time that they did meet, they were playing really well. We thought, you know, wow, this is going to be awesome. But I think Kali had a stick and Lex went to steal it, and she got really upset, and there's sort of this air fight moment that I think any dog owner having seen that is like, oh no, like it seems a lot more dramatic and frightening to the human than it is for the dog, which, you know, I've allowed myself to do the learning that was required to be like, okay, dogs show emotion and aggression a lot more differently than humans, and it's not always bad or as problematic as it might appear. But because of that, we felt uncertain about whether Callie and Lex could be in the same place. But the family was going away for a whole week, and my partner and I think it was over Christmas, and we thought about well, maybe one of us will be in the apartment with Callie and the other will be in the house with Lex, but you know, it's Christmas and we just kind of wanted to all be together. And so I took a chance and I communicated with both Lex and Callie, although admittedly it's a little bit more challenging for me to connect with Callie as my own dog. There's just some barriers there that I found. It's harder for me to believe what she tells me because it's I know too much almost. But, you know, I sent a lot of energetic messages to both of them and asked how, you know, if they thought they wanted to share space with each other. And we just did it slowly, you know, where we would have them outside but at a distance so they could look at each other and they could smell each other's, you know, pee spots and stuff. And then eventually after maybe 2 or 3 days out of the whole week that we were there, I think by the third day, we not only were they able to play around outside in the yard, they also shared space in the house and they would cuddle on the couch together. And again, it was just that reminder of oh, right, these animals just need our love and attention and patience. That's a really big one. And yeah, the owners, when they came back, they were so happy that, you know, their dog had a friend for the week and that there wasn't any more of that social anxiety going on.
Yeah, that's a really great story and gives a great example of how animal communication can really help, because integrating different animals can be a huge challenge. It's one of the things I work with all the time. And yeah, sometimes just listening and letting them know what's going on and can make such a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So I know besides pet sitting, you do a lot of other things, and I would guess that perhaps, you know, learning interspecies communication has changed other aspects of your life and work. Is there anything that stands out to you with that?
Yeah. Learning interspecies communication actually changed the entire course of my life in a pretty major way. I'm still in the midst of and still sort of reeling from, because it's now that I know that is a possibility, that being a professional intuitive interspecies communicator is a possible life path for me, it's almost like there's nothing else that I feel like I can devote my life to with as much passion and fervor as connecting with the wild, more than human world. But and as someone who's very much a doer and, you know, needs to pay the bills, and was raised, you know, in my bio, I use the term colonizer consciousness. And as someone who is, you know, as everyone really who lives in the Western world, or for me growing up in the United States, I was raised to believe that I am separate from the more than human world, that we can't communicate with them, you know, all of the things that go into what happens when you colonize an earth-based culture. And that kind of reclaiming that connection with the wild world and with myself, my own intuitive nature, that has been such a hugely transformative period of my life, because now I see, you know, of course, as I think, you know, hopefully more and more people are starting to understand that, you know, we need this right relationship with the more than human beings. Like, we I recognize I cannot take the earth for granted, that it almost feels to me like there's nothing more important than reestablishing that connection and kinship with the non-human beings with whom we share this earth. And that includes the trees and the oceans and the land and the mountains. You know, it's not just animals. It's not just mammals, certainly. But One of the things that learning intuitive interspecies communication has taught me is the importance of being an open vessel and recognizing when I'm coming too much from my head, when it's, you know, I get too stuck in the mental realms of thought. And I'm not feeling into my body. And I think that's what I'm noticing right now, is that I was coming from this place of sort of that busy human mind place. But when we started the interview, we had that grounding meditation, and I kind of joked that there may be a being who wants to communicate through us, you know? And I just had this sense of my mom's dog, Fenwick. He was like 18, we think. He was between 18 and 20 years old and just recently transitioned. And yeah, I just have this, he's sort of here on my shoulder, just reminding me, like you said, sometimes the animals are the ones who tell us who we are or remind us of our gifts. And he's just sort of here saying, like, yeah, remember, you are an interspecies communicator. You are this open vessel, you know, for the communication to flow through. And I think that it is so challenging for me personally. And I think I speak for a lot of people here when I say it's so challenging to live the intuitive life in the capitalistic colonized world that wants you to be producing and doing and making money or spending money constantly. And, you know, as most, I think, animal communicators know, it doesn't always pay the bills to have these connections with the animals, but it fulfills such a deeper part of my soul that it feels like all I can do sometimes, or all that I'm being asked to do.
Wow, you said so many things that feel so important. I feel like the part about having the right relationship, you know, not only with animals, but with all the other sentient beings, and like the whole of the earth included. And you and I first connected because we both attended the multi-species symposium earlier this year here in 2023. And even though I had been doing animal communication for many years, I had sort of, but not really, thought about how to apply that to, you know, the plants, the earth, the, you know, the rocks, you know, like the oh my God, the rocks here in Colorado are amazing. I was just looking at them yesterday going, wow. But we, like you said, in our colonized society, we become so disconnected. We see ourselves as separate, you know, and like I'm still watching my language about this, where, you know, we refer to animals that are not human as non-human. Mm. You know, we're always comparing other living beings to ourselves. And maybe that's just because that's how our brains work that way. But I totally agree with you, where living the intuitive life in the colonized world, where we're supposed to be producing and always, you know, engaged in this systematic market, et cetera. Yeah. But I feel very similarly to you, where it does really fulfill something deeper. And mm-hmm. like my inner 8-year-old gets so excited whenever I'm able to talk to animals or even like plants. Mm-hmm. Recently, it's really kind of just shifted everything for me. And it kind of sounds like it has for you as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So from our exchanges outside of this episode, it seems like you've got some really big aspirations for working with animals. Is there something that you're most looking forward to about the future and your skills with working with animals?
One of the parts that I've been learning to reclaim about myself recently is the visionary, the imaginative one who can envision a different world that is not going back to the past, but is, you know, listening to, respecting, drawing from traditional indigenous knowledge ways that have always contributed to healthy, wholesome relationships and reciprocal relationships with the natural world as humans being part and parcel of the natural world. I just wanted to name that, like, learning from Indigenous elders is one of the most important aspects for me of reclaiming this intuitive reconnection with the natural world and with the earth and with animals and non-human or more than human beings. The vision that I have held in the past, or that has kind of come through me, I almost don't want to name it yet publicly, because, well, first I recognize that it's not the end all be all. It's like the one lens that I'm even able to consider right now, but the possibility of, like, the scope of what is possible is so far beyond anything that I can even imagine right now, that I really want to keep it at kind of as that dark seed in the soil that's germinating, and I don't know what it will grow into. But I will say that I have this deep hope that someday, either, you know, I don't know if it will be something that I find or found myself, but I just long for almost like a sanctuary for humans, not just a human centric retreat center, but a place where people can come to reconnect with themselves, with their own souls, and with more than human beings with whom we share this earth. There's so many retreat centers, so many yoga centers, you know, plenty of conference centers, so many things out there that exist, that I personally have not yet found the place where there is a focus on intuitive interspecies communication, that it feels like the place that I need. And if it doesn't exist, perhaps I'm being asked to create it. So that's just one little part of it, is just a curiosity of both how I can connect more with the wild beings all around me, but also how to invite other people into that exploration, so that there is this ripple effect that, you know, the more people actually can start to see the world through what I would call an animistic lens, you know, animism, seeing the world as though everything is animate and alive, that I think to me feels almost like one of the keystone things that can be done it's not like we can reverse the effects of colonization and climate change, of course, but at least to contribute to a different, more healed and whole world that I believe is possible.
Yeah, that's really cool about bringing this vision, or holding, I guess it'd be more accurate to say holding this vision that's like a seed just starting to germinate. And I seem to remember from one of our very early email exchanges that you're looking to connect with people who feel a pull towards this same kind of vision. So yeah, anybody listening who is like, wow, yeah, that's cool, that's exactly what I've been looking for, I've been, yeah. We'll definitely include some information about how people can get in touch with you. So if this is really resonating with them, maybe you guys can get your visions together and come up with something that really brings forward what you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would love that.
Now, so you, your partner, and your canine friend Callie all live in a converted school bus, and you guys travel around and do pet sitting and other activist kind of work. Do you guys travel anywhere, or are you guys looking for more pet sitting opportunities, or what's coming up for you all?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's in that visionary seed stage where we're currently leaving this place that we've been house sitting, cat sitting for about the past 6 weeks. So we're moving back into the bus. We're here in Maine, in my home state where both of our families are, which it's been really lovely to get to reconnect with family after traveling for most of the previous year. But we are wide open right now to, like I said, we want to, like, I have this desire to either find or found some sort of a community where the main focus for people is reconnecting with the more than human world and dismantling what I refer to as internalized colonizer consciousness. So yes, we are open to pet sitting. Like, that's very much part of our income, part of our livelihood, something, a way that we both can offer our gifts. And my partner's he doesn't call himself an animal communicator, but he definitely is. He's just so, so good with animals and very sensitive, empathic person as well. But he's also a handyman, he's a handyman, and he loves doing projects and construction and likes to help out with people, you know, when we stay at their houses, if there are projects that they could use help with. So it's sort of a combo. But we're hoping to get out to the West Coast at some point in the next several months and travel in the Pacific Northwest and in California and Wyoming and Idaho, places I haven't gotten to see before.
Wow, that's really cool. I didn't realize that your partner also did handyman work. So that's, wow, that's like a huge benefit. But yeah. Then you get, like, give the whole combo thing, animal communication and your handyman. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Brianna, we've talked about a lot of different things here today. Is there anything else that we haven't already talked about that you feel called to share?
There's a part of me that feels like, oh, this is sort of a step that I'm not sure I want to take, but it's almost like I'm making a commitment to myself if I say it publicly, because I've been thinking about it for a long time and I've told enough of my intimate, you know, friends and family about it. But my last name, Hollowell, as you know, it literally means holy well, or one who tends the holy well. I think I referenced this a little bit earlier, that part of my sense of calling is to be like a clear channel or open vessel. In other words, like this deep well where love and energy and communication can flow through me. And I can also just be this nourishing well for people in the more than human world. I have this curiosity in the back of my mind of how to start, you know, producing. I don't love that word, but there is a sense of needing to contribute in some way to the wider world. I will most likely be putting out a newsletter, like the Holy Well newsletter, at some point in the next several months. And one of the biggest things that's held me back from doing that is a deep-seated belief that the world isn't ready for what these animals are channeling through me. But I'm just wanting to name that here because it feels important that, you know, if there is an audience who wants to hear more of what the animals are asking me to share, then even if it's only 4 or 5 people, that's okay.
Yeah, there is something about, you know, just starting where we are. And I feel like for me, being an animal communicator can sometimes feel very lonely. And, you know, like, because I'm working on my own and that was one of the things they talked about in the symposium that we had both attended. And frankly, this podcast was very much inspired by that symposium because I saw how many people were interested in this. And I was just like, holy cow, I had no idea. Like, this was so widespread and there were so many people doing actual scientific research. And perhaps I was also holding myself back a bit because, oh, well, there's only certain people who are ready for this or this or that. And but I guess I see like the generations younger than me coming up, like there's so much more openness than I'm going to say generally my generation and older might tend to have. Mm. And I find it really inspiring to meet people like you too, who are, you know, stepping into this, mm-hmm. frankly, at a much younger age than I did. I'm getting all excited thinking about this, but yeah. The one word that you kind of mentioned when I first asked this question was hope. Mm. And I feel like bringing this sense of hope forward to people that there is perhaps a different way of stepping out of this colonization mentality, that there is hope for something, and that if enough of us can keep bringing that forward, that we really can help redirect the path for the future. And I don't know, part of me really does want to give to that. And it sounds like you do too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad that it makes you so excited, because it makes me excited too to connect and remember, like, oh yeah, there's a huge community of people who live really far away. And, you know, the web is growing, and I have a longing to be in person with interspecies communicators, but also recognize that this is super, super meaningful, and can, you know, Zoom calls and things like the symposium can really connect us across continents. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brianna, for joining me here today. So if listeners wanted to learn more about you or get in touch, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, probably through our website. We don't use it super often, but there's information about house sitting and a little feedback form at the bottom where you can send a question or contact form. And that is www.thebreezybus.com. And that's breezy, like the breeze, B-R-E-E-Z-Y. Bus, B-U-S. That's also my email address, thebreezybus@gmail.com. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch. And then if people are on social media, we're also at thebreezybus on Instagram and also on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely include all those links in the show notes. So if people want to get in touch, they'll be able to just click right on over. So again, great. Thank you so much for being here and chatting with us. It's been so wonderful to talk with you here today.
Sure. Thank you so much again for having me. It was a true pleasure.
Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in today. I hope you find yourself tickled and considering what else is possible when we decide to listen in different ways. Your animal and nature friends want to communicate with you. Are you ready to listen? If you found this podcast valuable and would like to support us, please use the donation link in the show notes to make a donation. Thank you so much for your support. If you're an animal professional or interspecies communicator and would like to be a guest on the show, please send an email to hi, that's H-I, at tracy-pierce.com. Music is courtesy of Fesslian Studios. All links we mention will be provided in the show notes for this episode. If you found this show informative or helpful, please consider leaving us a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts.